This is the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Dawn Scherer, editor of Poetry Magazine.
I'm Christina Pugh, consulting editor.
And I'm Lindsay Garbutt, associate editor. On the Poetry Magazine podcast, we discuss a poem or two in the current issue. Sridhara Swami has published two collections of poetry, A Reluctant Survivor and, in 2014, Escape Artist. Swami spoke to us from Hyderabad, where she lives and works.
The idea for her poem, Barth Tells the Story Wrong, came to Swami during a writing residency in Scotland. She went to the laundromat and took along Roland Barthes' A Lover's Discourse.
I was reading it and watching the clothes go around. And for some reason, the idea of waiting while I was reading this kind of struck me as a thing that we do so much of.
Swami says there are so many different kinds of waiting.
There's the impatient kind when you're looking forward to something and you know there's something to look forward to. And there's the kind of waiting where you're also vacant and you allow things to happen to your mind and you allow yourself to watch and absorb things. Waiting for a lover, of course, is a completely different kind of sensation. And there's an element of pain to it always, and a sense of not knowing where you stand. I think also there's, you know, the idea of who has the upper hand in a sense. It's the person who's not waiting.
Here's Sridhara Swami reading Barth Tells the Story Wrong.
If you want definitions, here is one. A lover is one who waits. The next part, the part where definitions are unwoven and the threads laid bare, can be left to Barth, Roland, who said everything about it that needs to be said. And for what cannot be, and there are still some of those things, there are films which, no matter what the structuralists say, are not to be read. There was a girl who sat every evening at a particular table, hoping it was close enough to where the boys sat to make it appear a natural veering off when, if, he came to sit at it opposite her, but not close enough to make her seem desperate. Not always was her waiting played out as gestures of solitude. Other people gave her company. There was nothing in her face that could be read as signs of biding. This did not mean that she knew her time was up. This did not mean that she ceased to wonder and hope and despair and curse. This is where Barth got the story of the Mandarin wrong, the one who pined for the courtesan who had said that after the 100th night of waiting, she would be his. What Barth did was to report the Mandarin's departure on the penultimate night. He didn't say how, on the night the Mandarin left, the courtesan had made up her mind to tell him he'd waited enough, he could come in and... Instead, she waited.
As someone myself who's published a book named after a phrase you find in Roland Barthes, it's always great to see somebody engaging with him with such care in a poem. And I do think that this poem cares a lot about Barthes, even at the same time that it's saying he got this particular story wrong that he tells at the end of the waiting section of the book. And it's wonderful the way this poem kind of mimes the structure in a certain way of the lover's discourse, even to the degree of having the name Barth in the margin here, which is what he does throughout the lover's discourse. So I feel as if this poem is its own poem, but it's also pointing out to us that Barth himself was a poet, because I think he was, even though he was also a structuralist and a very interesting literary critic.
Probably better as a poet and critic than even as a structuralist, yeah. Though he's associated permanently with that. But I agree. I think a Lover's Discourse is a great book to read if you're a poet or interested in poetry, but it's also it's a wonderful book to read if you're filled with yearning and desperation. And it's sort of a wonderfully abject book. And as you say, you know, you don't need to really know the whole book to appreciate this particular poem because it does such a good job of kind of distilling and absorbing something from it. It's very witty and funny, the poem too, but it's sort of nice that it adds so many dimensions to something like the kind of waiting and yearning mm-hmm. that all of us know and go through. And it's an interesting question, both the poem and the book sort of raise that question about, you know, feeling that you're a lover when you're not actually with that person. I mean, that's sort of the sort of strangeness of it is that you feel, you know, like something is really vivid and almost taking over your life, and then it's for somebody who's not necessarily even with you or near you. So it's sort of a lovely commentary, but it's also fun on its own page.
Well, and Bart was also really interested in the relationship between the writer and the reader and what it's like to read something. And I think what's interesting about this poem is the way, as a reader, you're kind of left waiting. Mm-hmm. So the title of the poem is Bart Tells the Story Wrong, but we don't find out what that story is until the very end of the poem. So you're left waiting to find out how is this poem fulfilling its title. And instead, it goes through this sort of filmic scene where we're seeing the girl waiting for this boy that she's hoping will sit with her. And it sort of plays with this notion of the definition that is brought up at the beginning of the poem and also throughout a lover's discourse. And so instead of focusing on more definitions, it instead sort of defines things negatively. So there's this sort of repetition that this did not mean that she knew her time was up. This did not mean that she ceased to wonder and hope and despair and curse. And we never find out what it does mean. We just find out what it mm-hmm. doesn't mean. And so you're left sort of imagining this for yourself or waiting for the poem to deliver some information that it never really gives you.
It's moving, really, and really compelling. But it's funny, too, because this idea of reading, you know, like the structuralists had that idea that kind of everything could be read. And mm-hmm. and I love the concision in this poem of saying, you know, that like no matter what they said, like there are films which can't be read. Her face can't be read either. But mm-hmm. the way we know all this is through reading, mm-hmm. reading the poem, then reading the book that's at the, you know, sort of lies behind the poem. So it's very wry commentary on how we know our feelings or don't from reading. The idea that you sort of take these inchoate feelings and write them down, it's a weird thing to do, and there's some comedy in that too. I think both the lover's discourse and this poem acknowledge in their different ways the comedy of this kind of yearning that results in your confiding to a page and therefore to strangers, you know, people you'll never see or meet ever. Mm-hmm. You know, you're exposing all this deep down stuff to somebody because you're writing it and you want to be read, even as you say there are things, as this poet does, that can't be read.
Yeah, and I feel like for Bart, too, that's the comedy and the tragedy of the one who's waiting, because at the same time that he or she or they doesn't want to be read as waiting, he or she or they also wants to be very available if the lover ends up, say, for example, calling on the phone. That's a wonderful part of this section is, you know, it was written during the time in which landlines were the only lines. And so if you went out to the cafe, you might miss mm-hmm. the lover's mm-hmm. call. The other thing I think is interesting here is the gender attention, the attention to gender with the reversal of what's happening with the Mandarin and the courtesan. So when the story gets retold here and puts in what the poet is suggesting that maybe Bart leaves out, it is reversed again so that the woman is the one doing the waiting. And I think that's really a great connection to what's happening early on. Also, like Bart himself as the eye is all over the lover's discourse as a man, but as a gay man. So he's already doing some interesting things with gender, especially at the time that the book was published. And what's interesting, too, is earlier on in the book, he does talk about how the waiting figure is usually the feminine one. And so, in a way, he's feminizing himself as the eye, you know, when he's waiting for the lover and so on. The fact that this ends with she waited italicized on its own as its own line seems to me to really speak to the gender dynamic of waiting mm-hmm. and the women waiting, the woman waiting.
Well, and I don't know that the poet had this in mind at all, but I couldn't help but think at the end there, I was reminded of that idea, like she persisted, still she persisted. Mm-hmm. And it is like this very, it's not passive waiting. It's actually extremely active. Mm-hmm. It's a real activity and it can be very powerful. So that persistence that women have and have to have is really built in to the poem. And I like how the poet sort of takes that back and says, you know, taking something that could sound abject and acknowledging the strength and presence that it embodies. You can read Barth Tells the Story Wrong by Sri Dalaswami in the July and August 2019 double issue of Poetry or online at poetrymagazine.org. If you're not yet a subscriber to the magazine, and you really should be one, for a limited time, we're offering podcast listeners a special rate of $20. That's $20 for a full year of the freshest voices in contemporary poetry featured in 11 book-length issues, as well as free digital access on our mobile app. Visit poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer to subscribe. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer.
We'll have another episode for you next week where you can hear all four featured poets in the full-length podcast on SoundCloud.
Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org and please link to the podcast on social media.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Rachel James.
The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbett.
I'm Christina Pugh.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.